Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Mitchell Fain.
I'm Amy Matheny. Listening to the Windy City Queercast, show number 633, the very last Queercast that I, Amy Matheny, am putting out into the interweb. Wow, guys, here we are, 633. It has a certain kind of symmetry to it, doesn't it? It's a big show, and it's a big show not only because it's the last show, but also because it is a show where I finish a conversation that I started back in the late 90s around the conversation with Hawaii seeking same-sex marriage for that state, and comes full circle to just now, a little over a week ago, the Supreme Court of the United States held their ruling and announced that marriage equality would be the law of the land. And now people, LGBT people, are getting married from coast to coast, north and south, in all 50 states. And I am very excited to have the regional director of the Midwest for Lambda Legal, Jim Bennett, on with me today, which is only fitting, as Jim was on some of my first shows, many of my first shows, the first year with Windy City Radio, and also has been on so many of our shows here on the Queercast, talking about the marriage equality story. So we are coming to a chapter close with that story, and I'm coming to a close with the Queercast. And so many of you have emailed or called in or have seen me out and about the past month since the announcement was made that these last 5 weeks would be the last shows, and have asked, what am I going to do and why now and the decision? And I've kind of tried to share that conversation aloud with you, with my other co-hosts who have been on this journey with the Queercast along with me over the past 633 shows, to say it is a great thing and it is a sad thing. It is an exciting thing and it's kind of a scary thing as to what I will do this next week when I'm not interviewing folks and I'm not talking to you and continuing this conversation in this format. And honestly, I don't know what's next. That is the honest answer. I just know that it's time. And perhaps people can understand sometimes when you know a journey or a relationship has come to an end. And in my 20s, I was always ready to not let a relationship go until I quite knew what the next relationship would be. And that might have been a job, or it might have been a personal relationship, an intimate relationship. And I don't know. Now here at 40, I think that it's okay to not know, and probably there's strength and clarity in not knowing what's next than there is for me in knowing what's next. But I do know that this is the time. This is the time for me to sign off here on the Queercast to say thank you and to hold this space and hold this time with all these beautiful, beautiful people that have been on this journey with me. Through Windy City Media Group, all the sales team and contributors and correspondents and co-hosts, newsmakers whose news I have covered, and entertainers who I have laughed with and shared stories with, and you, the listeners, a few of whom we've been able to pepper onto the past couple of shows. So you can hear voices from listeners who have been tried and true, loyal listeners who have called in and chosen to give their closing remarks. And I'm sorry I couldn't include everyone, but happy to have some of those voices here as well. And also to have some of our regulars on today's show, Mitchell Fain on the show, and others. So other surprises in store. So I guess we just kick it off. There is no news this week. The news is that the show's ending, and I guess that's the news. The news is that that this is the end of this run for me. This is the pause. This is the space opening, and my hope and my reflection at this moment is that it is time for new voices to come forward in our LGBT community and start asking the tough questions and start having the laughter and start having the frothy conversations that help us grow and help us expand and help us to achieve all of our dreams, all of our protections, all of our equality. And it has just been an awesome, awesome ride. I mean, I came to Chicago to be an entertainer, came to Chicago to be an artist, not an activist. I came to Chicago to be a part of a community that I felt was vibrant and artistically and creatively and expressively. And I didn't know if I was going to make my career here doing the thing I had been trained to do. And the irony is I kind of did and I kind of didn't. I have been able to do theater and continue to do theater and artistic work here in Chicago. But I fell into this wonderful world of radio, journalism, and the LGBT community back answering a call for an audition to do a same-sex radio commercial back in the 90s on Lesbi Gay Radio, and I booked that gig. That's what the kids say today. You know, I booked that job, and from that became the What's Happening Girl on Lesbi Gay Radio for about a year, moving into then becoming a regular weekly co-host on that daily gay radio show, the first of its kind in the nation. We won awards. We won a GLAAD Media Award, winning our award in D.C., being presented with our award right after Larry King that year won an award for his work on late night television and in talk show television format. And the journey has just continued through the gift of Tracy Baim in my life and Windy City Times acquiring Lesbi Gay Radio and me and helping me find a way to merge my right brain and my left brain, my entrepreneurial business brain and my communicative, expressive, artistic other side of my brain and have the two work together. And so I am forever grateful. There have been too many people to thank. So I will just say the conversation continues. I'm just going to step outside of it for a little bit and be a listener and be a fan and be one amongst many, one among you, as a part of this LGBT experience. And, you know, my life, folks, is my life is very large and very abundant, and I'm very grateful for it. And I look forward to seeing what all it holds. And for you, the listener, I would just say thank you for being on this journey week after week with your earbuds in, or your speaker on your laptop or your desktop, listening to the show every week. I appreciate it beyond measure. And I've loved getting to know many of you, some of you that I call friend today. I've broken bread with you, but we've definitely all, whether I've met you or not, whether you live in the Chicago area or beyond, and I know we have listeners from across seas and across countries, I just say that it's a shared human experience we've been having here. And to me, it's been a profound one, and I hope it has been for you as well. More to come. We are going to kick off with an interview with Jim Bennett, looking at the Supreme Court decision on marriage equality. And, then I'll be back with my good friend, Mitchell Fain, on the show. On June 26, 2015, the Supreme Court of the United States made a historic decision. It was a pivotal day in the United States for LGBT Americans, a ruling that made marriage equality the law of the land. With a 5-4 vote that rang loudly from D.C. to around the U.S., they recognized the constitutional right of all couples to marry. And since that decision was just over a week ago, stories continue to abound of the victories, heartfelt reflections, as well as some continued battles on the LGBT horizon for the LGBT community as we move toward further equality. But who better to be on my very last show and bring this marriage story full circle, and at least to the end of one major chapter. I feel like it's like finishing the fifth book in the Harry Potter series, honestly. I've got Jim Bennett, the Midwest Regional Director of Lambda Legal, here with me today. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Oh, my gosh, I'm great. Great.
Congratulations. You're catching up on your email. Congratulations. I'm sure that this week and a few days have been just like an exhale and a blur, and maybe it's all starting to sink in. Where were you when the announcement came out Friday morning, June 26th?
Well, we expected it. Well, it had to either be that Friday or Monday. So, you know, each day was a little more tense. And so we were all crammed into our paralegal Graciela's cube, because she was the fastest on the internet and sort of tracking the different places. So almost our whole office, Camilla, our marriage project director, and myself, and we were all just crammed in watching it. And it was crazy, because it was the first decision of the day, and usually they release the decisions throughout the day or throughout that morning, from sort of least big to gigantic. And so we expected it to be the last. And then, you know, the first thing we do is go to the back page to see if it was affirmed or if we lost, and it was a clear victory. So we were absolutely nuts. And the funny thing, I guess, for us, because we've been working on it for so long, but all of us started crying, and then our moms started calling. We were like, you know, it was so sweet, because it was like everyone started getting calls from their moms. It's like, oh my God, did you see this? And so it was an absolutely beautiful day. Beautiful day.
Now, when you looked at that last page, I mean, one of the things, you know, because I want to talk about some of the things that made this ruling unique or were special or that really stuck out to you and will in the when we look back on this historic day and this entire fight for marriage equality. Many people have referred to, of course, Justice Kennedy's opinion in the case. Obergefell versus Hodges. And he said, no union is more profound than marriage, for it embodies the highest ideals of love, fidelity, devotion, sacrifice, and family. In forming a marital union, two people become something greater than once they were. They, the petitioners, ask for equal dignity in the eyes of the law, and the Constitution grants them that right. Powerful, beautiful words that really get to the heart of the matter. Do you think this Supreme Court got to the heart of the matter? Did they get to the law of the matter? What, for those of you who are really in the trenches, you know, what were the surprises and what were the things that you were so happy to see that they got?
It was as big and as bold as we could have ever hoped for. I mean, it was a fantastic ruling. That last paragraph, I mean, I have goosebumps with you just reading it. It is poetic. I mean, and it's a complete summary. And there's another line in there as well that where he says, you know, these couples respect the institution, and that they don't want to be assigned to a life of isolation or loneliness. They want to share in this incredible institution. And so the amazing thing about that ruling is, one, it grants us a fundamental right, that the Constitution gives us a fundamental right to marry, and that's key, because we're going to be able to use that decision in other ways. So we will try to use that decision to advance end-alike workplace protections. And there's things like, for example, we have a case in Wisconsin that just started a few weeks ago, which is two women were not able to get both of their names on a birth certificate for their child, even though they're legally married. And this decision makes that case we're done. Like, it, you know, I mean, all of those cases. And so there, it was an incredible ruling. And it's interesting because Justice Kennedy, the way they decide who writes it is, it's the longest serving justice on the bench that writes the opinion and the decision, unless it's the Chief Justice, and then he can either write it or pass it to one of the others. So Kennedy has written all three of the major gay rights decisions, and he's released the decision on the same day, June 26th of each year. So there was a lot of history in that in that decision, but it's amazing. It's extraordinary. And I imagine that last paragraph, especially that you read, we will be hearing that at weddings, whether straight or gay, for years, if not decades to come, because explained the institution like nothing else ever has.
So a 5-4 vote, was there a thought that it would be a 6-3 vote? And what was interesting about how the decisions went down between the justices, and also the fact that they wrote responses, I thought was notable. Yes.
Yeah, I think so. I think I predicted the last time we talked was a 6-3. So I was off. I really thought that Justice Roberts would want to be, even just for history's sake, on the right side of the issue. And it was clear that we were on the right side of the issue. There were four dissents. And each one wrote their own dissent, which is unusual a little bit. I mean, usually that one or two will write it together. I would argue that they're twisting themselves to find a reason not to do it. I think that if you had a compelling constitutional reason not to have everyone equal in the country, that there would have been agreement on why they were descending from the majority opinion. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you had all these different ones was interesting. And Roberts, it was sort of desperate. It was a really long dissent, 36 pages. And he tried to celebrate the couples that said, you know, but also, you know, on the other side of the same coin, trying to say that there isn't, the Constitution guarantees nothing for this. But how you would reconcile that with Loving v. Virginia, which was the allowing blacks and whites to marry, you wouldn't be able to. And then you had just a crazy opinion from what's his name, Clarence Thomas, you know, claiming that the gay couples have dignity even if they can't marry, no different than slaves did. And it was just a tortured and depressing opinion and a scary glance into his mind. But what matters is what the the five justices said under Kennedy's decision, and it's law of the land. And the nice thing for us was there's 14 states that still had to bring marriage online, and we filed, and many of the states were where we had cases. So Ohio was our case that was the one before the Supreme Court, but we also had a case in Louisiana, a case in North Dakota, a case in Georgia, and in those cases, and with our partners like ACLU, we filed that day and said, you know, we want marriages to begin right away. And in many of the states, you know, the governor and the attorney general joined us, even if they weren't for the issue, which, you know, allowed marriages to immediately begin and also to save the state and the Justice Department, you know, money by not, you know, trying to push something that you know you're going to lose. So it was very fast. I mean, we saw the states coming online almost immediately. And, you know, there's still some holdouts, you know, Texas, but I believe I believe in all 14 states people are getting married now, and I think there may be a couple holdout counties, but that will not last long.
Yeah, there were immediately, I was actually in the South when the announcement came, and I was in North Carolina, and I think I thought it would happen on Thursday. When it didn't happen on Thursday, I thought, well, it's not going to happen till Monday. I don't know why in my brain I just thought it wouldn't happen on Friday, so I was slightly surprised, but found out the second that it happened, and immediately started seeing, like, 2 hours later that, you know, the first lesbian couple got married in Atlanta, and the couple, the older couple, gentleman who'd been together over 50 some odd years, who got married, I believe, in Dallas, is that right, or in Texas?
Yeah, I believe so.
So, you know, these beautiful, heartfelt stories started pouring out. I mean, did in these states where the hardest, you know, the harshest resistance to marriage equality, you know, from what you see now here, more than a week after the Supreme Court decision, there is no legal leg for these states to stand on, right? I mean, this conversation is done, and eventually these states just have to get on board. I mean, if couples are having difficulty, they would contact you all, right?
Exactly. We've actually set up a marriage watch, and so if you go on lambdalegal.org, it's one of the first things you'll see on our website, and basically what it is a very brief intake form, and we'll follow up right away. And our groups, Lambda, ACLU, and NCLR specifically, have divided up the country sort of in where we're each strongest at, so that if a problem is rather significant, you know, we're all in communication and we're able to address it fast, but we are not seeing many problems. Like there's going to be a few county clerks that are going to refuse to give a license, which is illegal. They're government officers, and the government, the highest court in the land, has told them that this is a fundamental right. So they have no right to deny a marriage license any more than they would a straight couple or a couple of two different races or anyone that, two consenting adults that are in love and meet the qualifications of a marriage license. And for the most part, I have to say, I've been pretty impressed, like in how it's come online. And once you see these couples getting married, we've talked about this so many times, but once you see the love and commitment between these people, and especially people that have waited decades and, you know, forever to be able to marry, it's very hard for me to understand being against it. You know, the arguments of saying your religion is against it, that's fine. Then you don't have to go marry the same sex person if your religion is against it. But if you're doing a church can do whatever they want based on their church teachings. But as you and I both know, that churches are not of like mind on this. And we've watched the Episcopalians take a denomination wide stand last week on doing marriages, so they're gonna do lesbian and gay marriages, and their ministers can be gay or lesbian. We've seen the same movement in the Lutheran and the Presbyterian churches. So it's a great new day in America, and we can certainly be proud of our government and our president groups like Lambda and ACLU and all the people that worked, and every individual that had that hard conversation at some point with their parents and stayed in front of parents and neighbors and friends and colleagues and let them get to know them as people. And that's how we made change. So it's an incredible day.
Incredible day. So for those listening, of course, there were pride celebrations around the U.S. And around the world even for the end of the month. But just let me know a little bit about what your celebrations were like. I know immediately many of you were at Sidetrack here in Chicago and celebrating, and then the big pride parade on Sunday, where they said, you know, 1 million people were at the Chicago Pride. You know, how did that feel, and what were your takeaways from just being able to celebrate 2.5 days after a decision like that comes out?
Yeah, that was good timing, wasn't it? Our Lambda had planned, Sidetrack was really kind, and they offered to sort of make their bar available to us for the day for the celebration. And, you know, the media all go there anyway for reactions, so we thought, you know, why not go where the crowds are? So we were there at noon. By 1, it was packed, you know, the mayor, Greg Harris, Heather Staines, Kelly Cassidy, many of our reps, were there, and Lambda was there, and we had a great celebration there. It was wonderful. And then we went from there to, well, we just sort of partied all night, right? and then the next day was the Dyke March, and so we were all out at the Dyke March, and then the Pride, and this is all in Chicago, so, and then Pride, our float, we had a lot. I think we had close to 300 people in our group, and then and about a million, you know, in the whole thing. So that was incredible, and wonderful people cheering us. And we were part of celebrations like that all over the country. Some of our staff were in Indiana. We were at Stonewall in New York, and at the Supreme Court steps in D.C. and in Texas, and an incredible rally there, the biggest I think we've ever been a part of there. So it was an amazing weekend. And now we're sort of coming back down to earth, you know, as reality sets in.
Well, it's amazing, too, because then you have like this whole celebration of freedom and our freedom and freedoms and inalienable rights as Americans, and the protections of that right, those rights, and what we do, you know, what certain men and women specifically do to help protect us as a country heading into the 4th of July weekend. But it's interesting, and I guess I'm asking you this less as a person who is the, you know, regional director for Lambda Legal, and more as just someone I've known in the community, and, you know, you've grown up in activism and also, you know, have been with your partner for, gosh, now almost, have y'all been together 2 decades? No, 15 years?
Almost. I mean, we met in 99, beginning of 99.
So 15 years plus. I mean, I'm asking you this kind of as that. The other thing that obviously has kind of come to the forefront with the decision and the news coverage and the Pride Parade and all these photographs and images of people getting married is I would just basically say the transparency that Facebook has created for conversations of people who are not in agreement in this issue, perhaps on, you know, your own friend feed, you know, your own streaming feed. And obviously I live in a bit of a bubble, you live in a bit of a bubble, but seeing the different people put up their profile picture with the rainbow kind of hue lens.
Oh my gosh, it had to be almost everyone, it felt like, didn't it?
Yeah. And so what does it feel like if what do you think? Is it the opportunity to continue to be in conversation with these people who disagree, who happen to be in your quote unquote friend network? I mean, obviously, if they're a really, really good friend, you might not be in disagreement. And yet, you know, my partner and I don't disagree on everything. And I have family members that, you know, may not agree with everything I agree. You know, that we're not in agreement on everything. Is this a core issue that I must be in agreement with? Do you feel to have a conversation, or what is your whole thought on the unfriending or having a conversation or just
Yeah.
Allowing people to defriend you or what is this?
Right.
I've obviously seen a lot of people in the few days after be like, everyone has their opinion and everyone just be kind and everyone be tolerant and everybody be, you know, and then I've had people say, screw that. I've been kind and tolerant for forever and I don't want to do that anymore.
I guess I feel like I'm not someone that would defriend someone, you know, I mean, you'd have to go pretty far. Now if it's something like, you know, if there's something where I feel like it's overtly racist or homophobic or something like that, then I don't need that kind of person in my life. But if it's a, if there's some level of wanting to have the debate or learn or, you know, then I it's rare that I would defriend someone, although I can't say I have a lot of friends that are on the other side of at least this issue.
Yeah.
But, for me, like, well, I mean, you know, I met, you know, my husband now at our church, you know, Broadway United Methodist. And when he asked me to marry him, this was before I worked at Lambda. And I had said to him, I wasn't even looking at him. So he had asked me, we were laying on a beach somewhere. And I just said, well, sure, it doesn't mean anything. You know, it's not legal. And then I look over at him and he's crying. And I felt so horrible for ruining our moment. And, I realized as we went through church before it even had a legal status that it did matter. Like to be in front of your, the word marriage matters, and being in front of your friends and your family and asking them to hold you accountable for this commitment you're making to this other person is a very big deal. Mm-hmm. And, but I have to say that like, I did not realize how hard it would hit me when we won nationwide, that, you know, to be told that you're equal everywhere, to not drive 2 hours and then find that my status changes depending on where I'm at. Like it's an incredible statement from your government to be declared, you know, that it's a fundamental right as an American to have this. And so it was incredibly powerful.
Yeah.
In terms of where, and I also think there's a extreme gift in for me in just being able to work on a civil rights issue that I'm so personally impacted with. You know, there's many issues I care about, but not always will affect me directly, and this clearly did.
Yeah.
But I feel like in terms of my sort of people around the country and our friends that may have disagreed, I do think it opens up the door a little bit because there is. It's going to become much more normalized. And so in every form you go to across the country when you marry, it's going to either say spouse or it's going to have a choice with two brides or two grooms. And so there is a normalcy that comes of it. And when people say that, you know, that they're married, you don't have to assume, well, then they're straight. You know, you're going to have mm-hmm. to ask a couple more questions. And then the issues that affect sort of Lambda going forward are things like, can you be fired from your job? So you have places in Texas, for example, that there's no, and in many states, there's no LGBT specific protections. And so what happens is you have it's required by the city or the state you're in that they have a public registry of who sought a marriage license, mm-hmm. and then a business could legally fire them for being gay or lesbian, and there's no protection there. So that's obviously an area that we're going to be hard at work at, and always have been. But it's these kind of inconsistencies are going to come up more and more, mm-hmm. and there's going to be different challenges to laws. And I think once you're able to be married, and there's going to be a lot that flows from that are going to affect our entire community. So it's a good time to be having those conversations and bring all of our issues to the forefront.
Well, and exactly. I mean, it's there's so much joy in this decision by the Supreme Court, but there is still so much work to do, and why an organization like Lambda Legal regionally or around the U.S. is so vital. So many still decisions, you know, don't ask, don't tell, didn't solve all of the issues with the military that are still going to continue, especially for trans service members, as you've mentioned many times in this interview, Employment Non-Discrimination Act, and making sure that people are not fired or removed from their housing. Immigration is still one that is going to impact us, and as we are a community, just like any other community. And one of the conversations that I've said here, you know, and Tracy Baim has been a big ally for is the LGBT homeless and youth issues that continue to be impactful to our community and our the strength of our community and the future of our community. So there is still so much work to do. Well,
and those are tied, aren't they? They're hearts and minds, you know. So it's like kids are getting kicked out of their house because their family is saying there's something wrong with you, and now those kids will at least be able to say there isn't. You know,
yeah.
My government says I have a fundamental right to be equal. So I think we'll be feeling this forever. This has transformed our movement.
Yeah, absolutely. It will definitely be just so impactful to see where we are 12 months from now, 6 months from now, 12 months from
now,
and what this is going to, where the conversation is going to take us. Now, I'm not going to be probably leading that conversation since this is the last show for me and creating a lot of space in my life. And hopefully others are going to pick up this baton and continue to pick up the microphone and continue these conversations and these questions. And I'm assuming that this decision leaves a little space as well in your roster as because as you stated, you've been doing work on this so tirelessly. You know, how do you feel about that? People always ask me, like, you know, how do you feel about the show ending or your time as a host stopping? Are you happy or are you sad? And I'm kind of like, it's both. And are there feelings of both for you that this chapter has been written and new chapter begins?
It's mostly great. I mean, there's definitely a In having, you know, Lambda works on a variety of issues. A marriage has been my primary, if not sole issue for almost 9 years now. And so to see it end and to see it successfully end, it's absolutely fantastic. And I wouldn't want to go back one more day, you know. And I mean, every day felt like it was too long to wait.
Yep.
But there is a clarity in knowing your schedule and your priorities at work and looking at your schedule and figuring out where I want to invest my time that's sort of freed up for the first time in years. And similar to you, you know, my background also was in the theater and two years before the Illinois case was filed, I had made a decision that I really had to focus solely on this, that I didn't have time to write shows or anything else, that because I felt like anything else I was doing was at the potential expense of this work at hand, and there has just been nothing more important I've ever done in terms of my life. So I've started writing again and putting feelers out on auditions and things like that. But for the most part, all of us were sort of ready to move on, and in many ways, for me, I was sort of already focused in the backlash. I had been in Indiana for the religious freedom fight. You know, we just had our ass kicked in Michigan, so there's plenty of work ahead, and protecting our community and other people that are getting hurt because of these like religious freedom bills, which is mainly women. You know, and so that's a passion. It's a passion for me to make sure that marriage doesn't get watered down and that we don't take a step back after a big gain. So I think I'm ready. How about you?
I think I'm ready too. You know, I do feel like we will be better and more useful onto whatever the next thing is. And because we've been so deeply in the middle of these tasks at hand, you know, and that's the experience that we take with us that, you know, doesn't end, you know, it just carries on.
Right.
So I'm excited that you are, you know, geared up for your next thing and you will continue your big work with Lambda Legal and I as well. I'm geared up for, you know, whatever is next, but sometimes you just kind of have to pause to see.
And do you have an idea? What do you have on the horizon?
I don't. You know, right now I'm just creating some space and I feel like that will, the challenge for me will be to fill it with the next right thing, not just the next thing. And
and
to, you know, really see where I'm going to be useful and what's next. And I'm going to be excited about being a listener, I think, for a while and a little more of a voyeur.
How very unlike you.
I know, right?
How unlike us both.
How unlike us both. Maybe we should sit and have a bucket of popcorn together and just, you know.
That's what we should do. We'll piece it together.
We should keep it together. Well, Jim, I appreciate you so much. You have been, a constant voice with this since the early days of Windy City Radio when you co-hosted with me and been a wonderful regular correspondent with the Windy City Queercast. I could not thank you enough. It feels super fitting to have you on our last show. And thank you for being such a wonderful sounding board for us on this conversation for our community and especially for our Queercast listeners. We really appreciate it.
Oh, you're very kind. Best of luck.
I'm so glad we had this time together, just to have a laugh or sing a song. Seems we just get started, and before you know it, comes the time we have to say so long.
Well, everybody, let me just tell you, my biggest heartfelt thanks goes out to one person. And this is the person who, for 630 plus shows, has listened to every word I've said, and any of the people who have called in or been on the show have said or sung. Or she has literally had to know the Windy City Careercast at its deepest level. And they are always, on any team, the most important person in audio, video production. And that is our editor. Di Bowden has been with us since the very beginning. She is a dear friend of mine who, when we were moving into podcasting, and Peter left, I am not a technically savvy person, though she is training me pretty well over the years. I said to Di, I said, hey, you could do this even though you live in Indiana, right? Like, I just send it to you somehow and then you just send it back to me all better. And she said yes and got on this zany ride with us. And like me, she has never missed a show. So we have been on every show since the beginning. Di Bowden.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello. Hello.
You're actually on this side.
In sickness and in health, I was here for the show.
In sickness and in health. It's good because, you know, you also take care of the more important creatures that roam the world, the kittens,
yes,
and the cats and the doggies and the puppies.
Yes.
And, they have needs every day, many times a day, just like I do.
You had needs ever since we met. So
that's,
yeah,
true. So Di and I met during the whole Xena Live extravaganza that started in the year 2000. So we've known each other for 15 years. And,
which is insane.
Crazy, right?
Yes. And that started off with a weird technical thing, too, because I remember having to, like, pull the phone off the wall at the Lesbi Gay Studio to try and get us online,
yep,
to do that palace chat. So yeah,
we were doing a live chat. Somebody from this Xena website thingy, I didn't even know what it was. The Palace in 2000 called and said, hey, we'd love to interview you and Elizabeth Laidlaw and we can do it live. And this was long before tweeting, folks. This was long,
yes,
before you instant messaged somebody or texted somebody. I mean, nothing was live.
Mm-mm.
And they had this whole live conversation and Di came with the person interviewing us to run the whole chat, basically.
I was just there for the ride because, you know, at that point, anything Xena was okay with me.
Yeah, anything Xena. Soon,
yep,
it will be anything Wonder Woman. So
we
won't have a show to do about that. So, Di, you've had to listen to us all. I mean, primarily,
yeah,
you probably listen with the most intensity to me and Kirk Williamson doing the news.
Oh, yes.
I'm sure that there would be some you have in the past aired some bloopers of ours.
I know, and I was hoping to put together like a final blooper reel, but you guys have gotten so good over the years,
aww,
that I haven't really had much to play with.
Yeah, we don't make like
know. I think we just left that one up to Alex too.
Drinking water. You can hold on a second. Oh, that you make all those noises.
Oh,
we're like
God.
Mid-phrase. Yeah. Today, Hillary Rodham Clinton. Wait, I've got a furball. Yeah.
Wait, Di, I'm coming back. I promise. Yeah.
And then there are the names we cannot pronounce, and we say them 4,000 times.
Yep. It, sneezes, whatever. Yeah.
It's been at least mildly enjoyable to you.
They were, especially if you spoke to me. You know, I felt like I was always in the room sometimes because you guys would be like, oh, sorry, Di, or this and that, you know, or if you were recording with somebody, they'd give a shout out while you'd record before, you know, you aired the stuff.
Right.
So, you know, it was always kind of cool to be the little fly on the wall.
You have been the fly on the wall. It's totally true. I mean, Mitchell definitely references you and Kelly Simpkins and
Deb Pierce gave a little shout out. With her secret sounds of sex noise that she would, you know, when you would walk away from your iRiver, she would just totally go to town on that. So those were good times for me. Absolutely.
I've forgotten about that. I got up to go to the bathroom and I came back and Di was like, I need to let you know that when you got up to go to the bathroom, Alex just like literally made sexual noises for me into the recorder while you were gone.
It was fantastic. I was incredibly satisfied. It was so good.
So do you have favorite shows or favorite moments or memories from the 630 plus shows you've listened to? Just what comes to mind?
I have, you know, Alex was probably, I think, my first solo show that I actually had to like write the show notes and everything. Mm-hmm. But a show that really stood out was Lily Tomlin's because, you know, she liked to talk more than you. So it was really a fantastic interview. I really enjoyed hers. The musicians that you had on here, a bunch of them I learned to love because of the show that I'd never heard of before. Levi Christ being one of them, who I absolutely adore.
Yeah.
And Lady Gaga, you know, that was a really big thing. And I was supposed to go down to that gay idol, but I was terribly sick. Yeah. And there was a massive snowstorm, so I wasn't able to meet her. But that would have been something.
You've definitely, you know, had, not that we edit, because we don't, we should say, I don't really edit interviews. I don't ask Di to edit interviews. I always tell,
unless there was like a connection fail, they were just straight up.
They're straight up interviews. I mean, and I always tell people before you all, the listeners, hear the interview, I always say to a guest, I always say, this is live on tape. Which means I'm not going to stop you. We're not going to edit you out. You can say whatever the fuck you want, you know. And I kind of set the tone of like, I'm going to introduce you. I've got all the details that you need. Just sit back and have a conversation with me. And then, we don't ever edit it unless the doorbell rings or we lost a connection or my dog went nuts.
Saw something in the yard and went a little cray cray.
Yeah.
So.
Squirrel.
Yeah, totally.
But
I think my biggest editing challenge ever, and I don't remember the guest, but something had happened with the recording and your end of the conversation got erased. Or it wasn't live. I couldn't hear it. I could only hear him and his responses to your questions. Do you remember this at all?
I do.
So you had to record like you were speaking to him while you were listening to this recording. So it was like, you know, I was taming the schizophrenia in you when I listened to this because all I had was your voice. And then I had to place it perfectly inside with his conversation to make it sound like it was happening live.
I remember that because I remember it was my William Hurt broadcast news moment where it was like, oh wait, you didn't get that I cried? Hold on, turn the camera on.
Exactly. Wait, let me get the drops coming down my face.
That's
right. Totally.
You look like you could have cried. Really? I think I could. Hold on, let's try it again.
I remember that. You were probably sitting there, you know, pretending to laugh at something that nobody next to you was saying, you know. So it was just so wild. And I'm like, we did it. It actually sounds like it was supposed to. So it was really good.
Well, I remember because I had to listen to it and you had to listen to it and you had to say like, I need you to ask something that ends in this. Like, I remember you had to kind of almost feed me a script, which because I couldn't recreate. I mean, I prep an interview. I have a few questions, but I go off track. Within the first 20 seconds.
Yeah, but that one was special. That was really special.
I do remember that one.
Yeah, that was probably my biggest challenge, I think.
Yeah.
On the overhaul of all of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I know that you also, you know, you've also given big feedback on people we should have on. I definitely know Di has definitely set the tone for the music of the show. I've really let her set kind of the feel and the vibe of all our shows. So, I mean, that is just such a big part of the personality of the Queercast. And, you know, yep. She's given us an array of music and mostly, you know, often queer music, but just also queer and popular music that we've enjoyed. So,
yeah, I did try to, you know, match kind of the theme of what you all were talking about with interviews and whatnot to try, you know, kind of feed it all together, make it smooth.
I love that you just said connect it and you said y'all. So see, you're already, see how you assimilate
see?
So easily.
I've been brainwashed. Yes, absolutely brainwashed. Oh my God.
Oh, well, and Di, of course, you know, based on interviews and times like with the Supreme Court hearing, you know, answer response, you know, it's all about sometimes we don't know when something breaking or sometimes we think there's going to be a show is going to be a certain show. And at the last minute, I'll have to be like, Di, we're holding that a week because this thing happened, or we're holding that a week because I got this interview with somebody who's coming to town next week. And, so you have to be flexible to be in my seat and in Di's seat. And she has been a great co-pilot. And honestly, she's really been the head pilot. You know, I'm just doing the glory part of the job. And she is really doing the
glory
part
make
of the
you
job.
Look good.
You just make me look good. But I deeply,
which is not hard
deeply,
to do. So I've had an amazing time doing this. I mean, I was a fan of the show, you know, before I worked on the show. So I was just excited to get the news first. You know, I really was never really big on news of from our community.
Yeah.
So, you know, getting all this information was really cool. And, you know, getting to learn all the voices that you had on the show, you know, I didn't know all of them. You know, I'd met a couple over the years, but, you know, hearing them all the time, you know, you get to feel like you get to know them. So I really, you know, loved being a part of that. And, you know, with this show, I really think that our voices helped others to be heard.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, we were a part of something special. So I was just so, so happy to be a part of it. And I thank you so much for asking me to be part of it.
Well, I love you. And I thank
love you,
you
too,
so much.
Pea.
And now we'll just have to spend those hours you listen to one side of my conversation just talking directly to one another. That's
exactly
the bonus for us, as many of us have said. So, and Di, thank you, because you are down to editing your last show. So
I know it's very, very sad, but you know, I know that we, you know, with the Supreme Court coming up, it totally feels like it's the right time.
It was the right time. It was the right time. Well, I love you.
I love you too, sweetie. And thank you for everything you've done. You've done so much for our community with your voice and everything that you've contributed. I mean, it's been amazing. And I'm just so glad that you asked me to be a part of it.
I wouldn't have been on the ride with anyone else. Thank you. And I
thank
love you,
sweetie. Take good care.
The last Windy City Queercast, unless I had on my main counterpart here on the couch, the person who has been in this conversation with me for at least the past decade, which is crazy to think. I'm talking, of course, none other than Mitchell Fain, who you all have come to know and love, as I have always known and loved him, on this Windy City Queercast, as we have talked and we have laughed and we have watched award shows. We have drank on the couch. We have argued on the couch. We have surprised one another. We have shared secrets. We have, you know, opened our hearts. We have cried. We have wept. We've done it all. And now we will say goodbye together. And that makes me a little sad.
I know. I can see you getting weepy.
Woo.
First, let's explain that I'm literally sitting in Bermuda.
In Bermuda. So thank God for technology and thank God for podcasts that, like, Mitchell's in Bermuda. I'm in Chicago. He's sitting in sun in a wonderful little hat, and I'm like, it's June and it's raining and it's not hot here.
Oh, so, my God. It's so hot and so gorgeous. I'm actually sitting in what's called a seafarers center. It's like a place for anyone who like works on the ocean to come and hang out and have a drink and some food and some Wi-Fi and play pool. It's amazing.
Yeah. And end a podcast, a decade long podcast and 17 years for me in doing radio. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Amy, that's amazing. Hey, you know what I thought about? I've been thinking about talking to you today, and I realized one of the things that I was like, why aren't I more sad about this? And I realized that because when I come home, we're still going to have couch talk. We're just not going to be sharing it with the rest of the world.
I know. So now you're making all the listeners really, really sad because honestly, I've gotten so many wonderful comments already and just like, and emails and stuff. And, you know, and I'm thinking, of course, of our friends, Brad and Jason.
I know. I was thinking about Brad too. That's how I met them.
Yes.
I met them because of this podcast. I made two dear friends out at sea because of this podcast.
Because they knew your voice.
Because Brad recognized my voice and my name, which was mind-blowing. And it just shows you, I think, not to pat myself on the back, but I guess saying goodbye is a time to pat both of ourselves on the back, is I think when you tell the truth and you have honest conversation, whether it's about your queer life or your straight life or your in-between life or your whatever life, when you tell the truth, people, including myself, are affected, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, that's what I'm hearing from people, that people are, happy for me to make this decision and happy for the Queer Cast. Well, not happy, but they understand. It's a long time.
Yeah, really long time, Amy.
It's a really long time, and it's time for me to open up some space to do some other things, which will be nice. But people have come to go to work with us or ride in their car or take their run, wait for the bus, do their laundry, however they listen to us in their day-to-day life. We have become people that they know and people in their community and friends, all of us, you know. And as I said, I had this gorgeous email from James, who is a longtime listener, and it was so eloquent. And it really makes the whole thing.
I remember the first time we chatted was at the Starbucks at Belmont. And I mean, not the first time we chatted as friends, but the first time we chatted on your podcast,
right,
was at Belmont and Clark Street at the Starbucks.
Mm-hmm.
And then we didn't even know at that time that I would be moving into your house.
Yeah. Within months.
Within months. I mean, life changed. And so what's been interesting, I think, for both of us and also for people who like to listen to the podcast, is that people know that we've known each other for a long time, but that our friendship and relationship has grown so exponentially over these past 8 years that I've been living in the house, or 10 years. And it's been recorded.
Yeah.
You know, because as we got closer, we were freer to, I think when we first started, we were very polite with each other because we knew each other and we were friends, but you know, it was your podcast and I was being very polite. And then as we got to know each other, then we could disagree or agree or get so silly that we could barely make words because you say accidental dirty things in Yiddish or cry about something where we just both are bursting into tears about something, yeah, like So You Think You Can Dance, or yeah, something important like a young queer person who takes their life, or yeah, I mean, from the absolute important to the absolute ridiculous, you
yeah
know, and
yeah,
happening in the house.
We've both fallen in and out of love on the show. We've
yes
both lost people while we've been on the show. Mm-hmm. We've both had successes and challenges. But all in all, it's been a pretty rich decade, an abundant decade for the two of us. And I know that for many listeners, when they give me feedback, and even funnily enough, even, like Andrew Davis, our editor, at Windy City Times, you know, he'll just see me or he'll send me an email after listening to the show, and he'll be like, I love sitting and listening to you and Mitchell. And so,
I love that.
I know that you have been my mainstay, and for many people, the Queercast has become synonymous with me having a show that you are the person who walks in the back door, you know, and the hope walks in the back door at some point in every show. So,
I love that. I love that. I love talking to you, Amy, because let me just blow some sunshine up Amy's behind for a second. Amy, like me, the thing that you and I have in common is that we're both talkers.
Yes.
And we're both storytellers.
Yes.
And what's wonderful about chatting with you is that you always have a point of view. You always have a specific point that you're trying to make. You don't meander. And you're also so open to hearing someone else's point of view. And I think as an interviewer, not just chatting with me, but listening to you over the years chat with so many people, famous, not famous, infamous, important people, actors and artists and celebrities and politicians and doctors and whatnot, and psychics and whatnot. You've always had this amazing ability to utterly be yourself and to infuse Amy's Southern charm, but to also listen and hear and maybe learn. And I think that is very rare in talk radio podcasting,
yeah.
You know, is generally you get people, I mean, not to stereotype, you get people like the more conservative radio where they're just going to beat you over the head with their opinion. Where I think what you've done is always invited other people's opinions. You and I differ on a lot of things. You know, obviously we're very close. I mean, people understand that we're like mishpacha, family. But I mean, we disagree on a lot of things. We're very different people.
Yeah.
And to have a place to have that discussion has been really important to me, and a real sense of release. And I always feel at home on the couch.
Well, and you know what you're saying is really, really cool, because if you're only around people who share your point of view,
yeah, exactly.
It's not really a conversation, you know? And what I love is that you and I have always been able to bandy about. And I do know that sometimes co-hosts will say, well, I'm going to take this point of view, you take that point of view. If we agreed on something, we agreed on something. And that probably took us to another level.
But in fact, if people want to know the truth, we the only thing we've ever discussed before a podcast is like, well, we should probably talk about this because it went on, and it's sort of something, a topic that you had announced in the, you know, in the teaser. Other than that, we have no idea what we're going to talk about ever.
They know that, Mitchell. They can tell that. They can tell that. That's not news. I hope that's not news. 630 something shows in. I think they know that. You know, it's funny because to me, it's always felt like I'm just supposed to be the person helping host a conversation of people. And sometimes it's been a conversation, a monologue. I mean, there have been those rare shows where I've kind of been almost on alone. Usually it's with at least a guest coming on to talk with them about something that they have a point of view about. And then it's often been this wonderful gaggle of friends that I have been on the show. These past couple of shows, the past four shows, have all been, you either heard little snippets of people who have been regular co-hosts or whole shows, like the show with Alexander Billings and Scott and I at the Tonys. And so, you know, it's just been this really rich culture of voices I've been very privileged to just be a part of. And that is, you know, I really feel like we've done something groundbreaking here. It has been groundbreaking since the day of Les By Gay Radio. I am not saying that I've done something groundbreaking,
but
it is bigger than me. It is the fact that I turned on a mic. Somebody showed me how to turn on a mic, and to this day, I really don't understand anything technological of what happens here.
I watch you every single time, sort of kind of think maybe you know what you're doing.
No, it's like Pavlov's dog. Somebody said you press the red, then you do the green, then you jump on your one foot three times, and then you send it to die. And that's what I know how to do.
And then die takes care of it.
That's right. Thank God for die.
Right?
But anyhow, I love you so much, and I appreciate all that you have brought to the show. And you really have brought such a
thank you,
a different perspective. And at the same time, you go there, and I think I can say that of almost actually of every co-host I have, but that you really are willing to go there and maybe fall on your face, but you'll go there. And that makes for a great conversation. And you really often don't fall on your face. You 9 times, if you ever fell on your face.
I usually stick the landing, but when I do fall on my face, that is where comedy lies, my dear.
That is where comedy lies. Oh my gosh. Well, I have so many wonderful memories of us following your travels around the world. You have taken us around the world. At least given us a perspective of gay culture and gay life because of your wonderful work with Second City on the ships. Once a year, we've missed you, but then we've gotten to welcome you back like a favorite son. And so that's been wonderful, and it's been wonderful to because with you also comes all the people that you've introduced us to in the same way that, you know,
yeah,
I have.
I was thinking about, I met Megan since this thing has happened, and Megan is now a part of our family.
Yeah, Megan, and we've had you telling stories of wonderful, primarily young straight people that you've worked with who
circus
been
friends.
Able to give a perspective on our community. And, you know, it's a lot of what, even Alex and I were talking about on her show and even others, you know, of just, you know, the mainstreaming of our conversations now, which began, I think, it began with Les by Gay Radio of just putting us on the airwaves. And if you happen to turn your dial on the AM dial,
you might get a little gay.
4 to 6, you might get a little gay, which that was already rare and unique. And the first time that was happening in the United States on a daily basis. And then we moved to FM. Where it's like, oh, okay, I'm listening on the weekends, and we would have truck drivers and people like that calling us. And then with the podcast, now you have people around the world who just have so much knowledge and so many voices and so many stories at their fingertips. And so you've brought a cacophony of those experiences and reflections and lives to us.
It's interesting. You know, I just wanted to say, you know, this idea, this perspective that I've been doing the podcast has sort of coincided with when I started working for Second City, time frame wise. And it's interesting that the conversation that we've had seems to, not that it has to do with us, but that it is becoming global, because when I first started these contracts, it was, you know, these questions of like, can we put queer content in these shows on these incredibly conservative ships, right?
Right.
The cruise, I've talked about this, cruise passengers tend to be very conservative. And now I'm in this cast and we do this song, and in the song, my line is, I wonder if my ex-boyfriend ever dreams about me while he's sleeping and I'm watching from his bushes. And I don't change the, I mean, it's supposed to be a joke, but I don't change the line. I don't change the pronouns. I out myself in improv sets. I will play queer characters. I will play characters as gay, and I don't ever apologize. And not that I ever did,
right?
But it seemed radical when I did it 8 years ago. And it has coincided. The conversations that we've had and put out to the universe seem to be karmically being received, because the responses that I get from this same crowd, I mean, it's the same demographic, is overwhelmingly loving and supportive. And they tell me I'm their favorite. And, you know, I think it's partly because there's a level of speaking this authenticity of our lives is new to a lot of people.
Yes.
And I think we've helped put that into the karmic atmosphere.
I
hope so. I mean, I don't want to be self-aggrandizing. I hope that that's true, because I feel it coming back at me on this contract. I feel so embraced by people, and I am no more or less myself than I ever have been. And sure. I feel more embraced.
Well, we have embraced you. I know our listeners have embraced you. I wanted you to be here on, you know, here at the end, at the finale, so to speak. And it's been a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful journey. As you said, I'm going to see you here soon. Not soon enough, but I'm going to see you here soon. And we're going to sit on the couch and we're going to continue this, and who knows, maybe we'll find a way to podcast just us on the couch somewhere. Like, we'll be, I kind of have this idea that, and I mentioned this to Scott, I was like, I kind of have this idea that I'm going to be like Barbara Walters, and I'm going to say I'm not going to be on television anymore, and then I'm going to come up with my Barbara Waldwaugh special, my
Waldwaugh yeah, like a special,
right? And
Next one is on the beach of Rhode Island.
There we go. So we might come to you from a podcast from a couch on Rhode Island. I would just love it if we took a couch and we moved it
to
different places.
I love that.
And then we talked, you know. I think that would be great. Well, thank you so much, my friend, for being on the couch with me all these years. I love you.
I love you too.
Our listeners love you so much. And you know, continue to follow everything Mitchell Fain does, because it's always a fun ride, and it's always with a big heart and a smart mind and his whole self in. He does the hokey pokey with his whole self in. So I love you, my friend.
I love you too. I can't wait to see you. I miss you, and I can't wait to come home.
I can't wait for you to be home either.
Don't you forget about me.
Hi, this is James Scales Evie, a longtime listener and fan, and I just wanted to say to Amy and everyone who made the Queercast possible, thank you. Before we had tweeting and posting and instant access to all this LGBT news, you were the ones keeping us informed about the news, entertainment, and issues that really mattered to us. For all those kids, and adults too, who weren't part of an LGBT community, or couldn't bring home LGBT newspapers and magazines, or teen tune into LGBT-themed TV, you've been that lifeline. Thank you for enriching my life with the theater, books, movies, music, health news, and travel tips I wouldn't have gotten anywhere else. Thanks for the wisdom of Ms. Cleo and Alexander Billings, the brilliance of Mitchell Fain, and the Canadian insight from Deb Pierce. I'm going to miss your show, but I look forward to the awesome possibilities awaiting you and wish you all the best. Thanks.
Everyone, so that's it. This is our show. This is what we have built, and I do mean we. It has taken all of us to create this experience that is podcasting. And when I started this show 633 shows ago with Peter Maverick in his apartment, and now as I end it in my house on the north side of Edgewater, we started in Lakeview, ended in Edgewater, where I record most of these shows. The world has changed. And the world of podcasting has changed. There's so many new vlogs and blogs and podcasts and vodcasts and everything, web series and television series, so many things, documentaries, so many things telling our stories in a multi-format way now. In the early days, there were very few. I am grateful for all those voices that have added their voice to the community. And for those of you just living your life, you know, Harvey Milk said what we needed to all do was live our lives out and proud. Thank you for living it out and proud with me week after week. And I just love you all. Thanks so much. Signing off for the last Queercast from Windy City Queercast 633. Thanks for making each and every one of them beautiful, and have a wonderful, wonderful week, everyone. So thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueerCast.com and iTunes. Windy City Queercast, queer and now. And all that comes is here and now. My universe will never be the same. I'm glad you came. I'm glad you came.